south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, new news on the COVIDiot front here in Latin America. As you probably know, things are changing all the time, which brings to mind that joke I told a while back where a guy walks into the doctor's office and says, "Doc, look, when is this COVIDiot stuff going to be over? When can we get back to normal? When will the virus finally run its course and we have herd immunity and all that?" And the doc shrugs his shoulders and says, "I don't know. Don't ask me. I'm not a politician." Meanwhile, I've got this very interesting email from Hugo. He says, "Dear Johnny, been listening to your show for over a half year now. I've been to a few of the tourist cities in Mexico and Costa Rica once too. I was also in a situation where I had to bribe the Mexican cops. Took place after hours in a bar in Playa del Carmen. How it went down was it was bar time, and as we rolled out, the cops were waiting outside. This was right before the COVID thing, and the cops claim we violated the bar's closing time. And it was past hours, but we didn't have any drinks in our hands or anything on the street. Anyway, $50 solved the problem nicely. Now, I don't know what would have happened if we wouldn't have forked up the dough. But, you know, at 2 a.m. and kind of feeling our oats, we just figured, what the hell, give them the money, no sense in arguing, and maybe spending the next few hours down at the police station. All in all, it looked like a setup to me, but hey, as you say, Johnny, this is Latin America, where everyone's got an angle and everyone's got a price. Which brings me to the point of this email. Johnny, I absolutely do not want to get that vaccine. And if I had any inkling of doing so, just to make life easier, after hearing reports that a half a dozen European countries are not allowing the vaccine to be administered to elderly people anymore, and many healthcare professionals in the States not taking it either. We're just now hearing about bad secondary effects like blood clots, etc. I really believe that alternative medicine guys are right in saying that since they eliminated that crucial step of animal testing, which takes a couple years, you know, when they're proving a drug, that means we are the guinea pigs, and I don't want to be one. However, as you and many people have mentioned, there will come a time in 6 months, a year, who knows when, but it's coming, when everyone needs to have a vaccine card to get around, get on buses, go on planes, sign up for school, etc. So, Johnny, my totally inappropriate question to you is, since, and I've witnessed this myself, rules in Latin America are very flexible and sometimes broken for a small price, I have to believe that there will be some doctors and clinics out there who feel the same way about this vaccine, and thus will give you a valid vaccine card with a nudge and a wink for a smaller, maybe medium, or even large gratuity. Johnny, I have to believe that's going on, especially in light of the fact that on one of your previous shows, you spoke about how in Mexico, the narcos have been getting involved in the testing and vaccine business. I heard mentioned that there are many reports showing that vaccine packages, trucks, and shipments have been stolen, and that narcos or their underlings are going around selling vaccine doses door to door. And since it's all over the media in Mexico, people do line up for them because they're cheap and they do believe they're legit because they believe the news reports and that there are millions of doses stolen. And those narcos, sly scammers that they are, have found it's a great marketing ploy to push counterfeit vaccines that seem to be showing up everywhere in Mexico. So, long story short, Johnny, will I be able to fly down to Mexico or Central America with no mandatory vaccine card for flying yet? I repeat, yet. Then show up at a certain designated clinic or doctor's office and buy one of those legit vaccine cards with a nudge and a wink, but no prick. If you read this on the air, please call me Hugo, not my real name. All right, Hugo, I'm glad you asked that question. You're not the first one, by the way. Well, being down here over 30 years now, let me tell you what it's like. When certain situations arise where rules have to be bent or even broken, let me start by telling you about a sticky situation that many gringos and expats get themselves into that can only be solved with a payoff or bribe. Now, most all expats with a plan B who plan on living in Latin America the rest of their lives or most of their lives, they come down with a valid driver's license from whatever state they came from, Texas, Wisconsin, New York, whatever. And those licenses are absolutely great and good to go when you're down in your Latin country. even though there are some gringoized countries like Costa Rica who say you can only drive for 6 months on your U.S., Canadian, or other foreign country license. That means you have to apply for a local license after 6 months, which is completely impossible legally unless you've got residency, which takes sometimes up to 2 years to get. So you're stuck for a while with no license at all, or at least technically you shouldn't be able to drive with your American license. We're talking about Costa Rica now. Remember, that's the oddball case in all the rest of Latin American countries. As long as you've got a valid U.S. driver's license, you can drive. To me, that six-month rule in Costa Rica is basically to extort money out of gringos because there are tons of locals driving around with no licenses at all or completely expired licenses, and they never get fined or get a ticket. But that's another story. You know, Costa Ricans are out to gouge gringos. It's a way of life for them. Then again, we've got no one to blame but ourselves. Anyway, as for the rest of Latin America, if you're down on your plan B and living here permanently, your California or Cleveland license will expire. After all, they're only good for 4, 5, or 10 years, depending. And guess what? These days, you can't just pop back to your state and renew your license at the driver's station like you used to be able to. I understand now you have to prove residence and bring utility bills in and such. In other words, it ain't easy like it used to be. So let's suppose that your U.S. license has expired and you're living in Honduras. Now, 99% of the time in most all of Latin America, if you get pulled over and your license, your American license, is expired, the cops won't even care. They'll look at the picture and stare at it a while, but, you know, it's in English and they don't speak English or read it, so they won't scrutinize it at all, even the numbers and the dates. Though if they recognize the state and have a relative living there, they may get really friendly, and they'll ask if you know Uncle Tulio living in Cleveland. But here's the thing, us gringos and expats come from a first world society, and things like not having homeowner's insurance, car insurance, or a valid license that's not expired instills a kind of first world anxiety because we've been used to playing by the rules all our lives. And when we get to Latin America, it could take forever to get used to cultural differences like mañana time, people constantly running red lights, and those occasional little bribes and payoffs necessary to grease the wheels here. So I do get this question all the time. Johnny, my license expired 6 months ago, and I can't go back and get another one because I don't live in Texas anymore. And I'm not a resident yet here in El Salvador, and my Spanish sucks. So I can't go down to the driver's license station and get one. Because, you know, to get a legal driver's license in any Latin American country, you have to be a resident. You have to have that cédula card. Oh, and by the way, if you have that cédula and your Spanish really sucks, don't worry about it. You'll still pass the driver's exam, even though it's in Spanish. All you have to do is take a driver's ed course for $100 or less. The very last day, your driver's ed classroom instructor will go through the complete test with you. It's Latin America. You gotta love it. But what if your New York or Michigan driver's license has expired and you don't have your residency? Then you really have no valid driver's license, do you? It's a spot a lot of gringos and expats find themselves in because sometimes we're just not paying much attention. Now, of course, you could always get one of those international driver's licenses. In fact, for I think it is $65, you can get one that lasts 10 years. But you have to scan a valid license and send it to them before they'll complete the deal. So then you're in the same quagmire if your license is expired because you have to send a scan to them. However, if you know the basics of Photoshop, you can get around that quite easily. Not recommending anything illegal here, but you know, I'm just telling you what a lot of gringos and expats do. Oh, and there's been quite a few cases I know personally of gringos up in the States who lost their licenses due to just too many DUIs. So they've got no license at all, yet they own cars and drive around all through Latin America. How's that possible? Well, again, this is Latin America, and you can go into your lawyer's office, lay out the problem for him, and generally, he knows a guy who knows a guy, if you know what I mean. And in no time, for $100 or so, you will have a valid driver's license. Now, is it totally registered in all the government computers with all the proper stamps and seals? Well, that's debatable. But I'll tell you this, every time I've been stopped by a cop, and that's been quite a few times, I've never once seen them run the license through any kind of scanner or checker to see if the thing actually is registered. And of course, they'll never do that with a U.S. or a foreign country license when they barely have their own computer systems up and running. Though I guess there will come a time when things are run smoothly and all the proper checks can be made. These days, I can assure you it ain't happening yet. And so far, I've only seen it happen when a gringo or expat or even a Latino gets in a car accident and the cops come and the insurance adjusters come because, you know, most all gringos and expats wouldn't be caught dead without car insurance, and that's a good thing. Thing is, the insurance adjuster will make sure you've got a valid license or they won't pay the claim or they're not obliged to. That's in the fine print of every insurance policy worldwide. So bottom line, Hugo and everyone else who's interested in Hugo's question as to whether there will be a sort of gray market answer to getting that vaccine card. Well, you know, if you can get yourself a driver's license by duking a guy who knows a guy, and that's a document that's registered with various government agencies, right? Well, you can be damn sure you'll be able to get a vaccine card in pretty much the same way. And I assure you, that's not a new idea. They're doing it up in Mexico right now. And as far as a central registration database for those vaccine cards, well, you can bet that'll happen up in the States and all the first world countries. But down here in Latin America, it'll be bureaucratic government business as usual. There'll be so many thousands of doctor's offices, clinics, and hospitals involved. There'll be just no way for all the separate entities to get their acts together. Oh, and by the way, if you do end up with a gray market nudge and a wink vaccine card or pass without the prick, it will be registered and certified with that lab, doctor, or hospital. It'll be from a place that's 100% legit. It's just that it'll be two businesses in one, a legit front door business and a back door business by invitation only, too. Hey, I'm not advising again for you to do anything illegal. But when it comes to your health, you're the one who's got to decide what's good and bad for you. And in my case, well, I'm not getting that vaccine, unless under knife, gunpoint, or extreme duress. But remember, if you're thinking about that route as a possibility yourself, you've got a certain window of opportunity that'll probably be open for half a year or less. That is, until the U.S. government announces that everyone who flies is going to have a vaccine card. Then, of course, it'll be like the mark of the beast. You won't be able to go anywhere without it. And if you're stuck in the first world, when that edict comes down, you'll probably have to get it. But during that little window of opportunity, you could head down to your favorite friendly Latin American country. And if you have the right connections, well, you get the point. Oh, and by the way, have you been reading lately that lots and lots of people who've gotten the vaccination end up with COVID anyway? Hey, we're not calling it the age of COVIDiots for nothing, huh? Don't you think that fools like Gates, Fauci, and Biden should get two shots just for good measure? Hey, two masks? Two shots? Two brain cells? Why not? Oh, and please don't hammer me with emails asking me where you can get one of those gray market COVIDiot cards. Your best bet is to come on down during that window of opportunity and talk to a Latin lawyer. They might be coy and deny it at first, but if you press them, they always seem to know a guy who knows 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 a guy. Oh, and you longtime listeners have heard me say this 1,000 times. You have to hook up with a good Latin lawyer and stick with him. You can't go lawyer hopping. Because if you're asking for a rule-breaking favor like that, if you're not a regular client and don't have a decent relationship with the guy, he's not going to stick his neck out for you. Why would he? By the way, there are lots of other little sticky situations your Latin lawyer can get you out of that you wouldn't even want to mention to your lawyer up in Cleveland. Like I said, whatever sticky situation you might be in, your lawyer will know a guy who knows a guy, even if he doesn't admit it at first. Need another example? In the words of Jimmy Durante, I got a million of them. Problem is, of course, here in Latin America, documents and paperwork can be easily manipulated for a price. I'm talking about things getting backdated and such. I've seen it in action. That's why you really have to have a lawyer, be friends with them, and have them on your side. You go lawyer hopping, and in time, you could regret it. Take the case, or the multiple cases, I should say, of friends of mine who have got stopped drinking, driving, and swerving. Obviously, drinking and driving with open booze in the car. Well, in most all cases, if you've got your lawyer on speed dial, he'll get you out of it right there. And you might just end up with a police escort home and a smile. All right, now picture that situation where you don't have a friendly lawyer on speed dial. And what about gringos and expats dealing with the courts and the legal system here? If you want to take someone to court or someone wants to take you to court, if you've got a friendly lawyer, he can postpone that case into infinity or settle the whole thing tomorrow. That's one of the reasons why here in Latin America, very few people sue. They don't sue for many reasons, and here are three good ones. Number one, a case can be drawn out and postponed for years. And secondly, the guy with the most dough usually wins because he can pay his lawyer to stretch it out into infinity. And when there's really long time periods involved, the witnesses and principal players in the suit are very hard to round up. And number three, probably the best reason of all, frivolous lawsuits are not tolerated. In other words, if you initiate a lawsuit and you lose, you pay the other guy's legal expenses too. Imagine the damper that would put on lawsuit crazy Americans up in the States. Oh, and lawyers never work on contingency either. You know what I mean. You go into a lawyer's office and say, if you sue this guy, I'll give you a half or a third or whatever. That's commonly done up in the States, right? Down here, you pay the lawyer up front. He's not going to wait months or even years for his dough. Even simple cases could stretch out months at a time, even years. Now, of course, remember, we're talking about Latin lawyers, not gringo lawyers. So they're making less than a quarter of what first world lawyers get. That means they're unlikely to break the bank, except on the gringo tourist trail where gringos get gouged by lawyers all the time. Oh, and unlike American lawyers, Latino lawyers aren't on the clock all the time. When you call them up for advice or whatever, the clock's not ticking. Oh, and many times, a lawyer will just give you a set price for whatever needs to be done. And since everything in Latin America is negotiable, so is that price. Do remember that and don't be afraid to open your mouth when the negotiations start. Now, I don't want to make this more complicated than it really is, but I think you're getting the idea. Oh, and how about this email from Billy, a lady? Guess her parents wanted a boy, huh? She says, Johnny, on a recent past show, you mentioned the drug sumatriptan, the first really effective non-opioid migraine medicine, developed first by Glaxo, called Imigran, and in some countries known as Imitrix. You also spoke about generic drugs. Let me tell you, Johnny, I was knee-deep in that controversy because I was a rep for Glaxo Pharmaceutical. When I applied back in the day, some 30 years ago now, fresh out of college, I knew Glaxo spent millions on AIDS and malaria research, and back then all the propaganda was saying what a great thing they were doing for the world, malaria being one of the number one killers. It is a huge international company, and I came in on the ground floor of the sales force. I had my degree in marketing and advertising, but I wasn't prepared for the training I got as a Glaxo sales rep. Specifically, Johnny, and what a coincidence, to sell their new drug, Imitrix. That was the push. That was the flavor of the month when I first signed on. The job came with a great starting salary, a company car, and 2 weeks of training, like a crash course in medicine, with an emphasis on headaches and the respiratory system and everything and anything about the different types of migraines. It was also a great education in how to sell things to people, even things they don't want or have any use for, which was really an eye-opener for me. And I was in marketing and advertising. I was the guy to sell Imigran directly to the doctors. And Glaxo, bless their dirty little hearts, taught us all the techniques on how to outwit doctors' secretaries to get appointments. They also taught us how to evaluate doctor and secretary personality types and how to pitch and hone our sales techniques precisely to which kind of personality types we encountered as we entered a doctor's office. We had our quotas too, and our goal was to walk into a doctor's office and get a sale 70% of the time. Of course, we handed out boxes of samples, and since Imigran actually did work, it became such a huge seller that in some years it racked up the sales of $1.2 billion. Why? Because we were selling it for $25 a pill. Now, the bulk of our training was not really in medicine or drugs. It was in personality profiling. If you sense a doctor, for example, was the authoritarian type, you had to keep your pitch short and make it clear how clever you thought he was. Just lay on the compliments without making it too obvious. You let him talk a lot. Then when you pitch the drug, you just parrot back to him some of the very same words he had used. Now, if your doctor was the analytical personality type, you don't mention the medication at all at first. You went straight into a long discussion of all the different kinds of migraine headaches. I could see right away it was all about manipulating and hooking the doctors. And so every day, me and my sales platoon would descend on doctors' offices like ants at a picnic and aggressively pitch that migraine medicine. Now, what most people don't know is that the U.S. and New Zealand are the only two countries in the world that allow TV ads about prescription drugs. For us sales reps, that was icing on the cake. Did you ever notice how happy and animated the people in those ads are? Young couples frolicking through fields of flowers, lean, smiling, well-groomed, geriatric couples on the golf course, attractive, well-tanned grandparents pushing their cute young grandkids on a backyard swing. When I went on vacation for the first time in Latin America, it was a revelation, relief, and a pleasant surprise not to see any kind of drug ad at all on TV except aspirin, Alka-Seltzer, Pepto-Bismol, and toothpaste commercials. I felt like I was in a time machine back in the 1980s again. And on that very controversial subject of generic medications, I can tell you from my own experience, everyone in the drug industry knows generics are the same. There's no change in the formulation. Case in point, when Imitrix, Imigran, had its patent run out so that other companies could produce generics, Glaxo kept selling Imitrix and Imigran, but also formulated their own generic with an added inert compound. The exact drug from the same manufacturing line, under a subsidiary brand name at half the price. Meanwhile, a number of other companies started producing the generic sumatriptan for as little as $1 a pill to the customer. Lots of online overseas pharmacies in Canada, Britain, and India, etc., offering that kind of deal. But people, especially people in first world countries, are fooled by marketing ads and doctors and well-placed internet articles that are just marketing articles, really, dissing generic drugs. So Glaxel still makes its billions selling Imitrix through doctors' prescriptions, and they're making millions on the generic, too, at half the price, while other generics out there that are exactly the same are selling for 1/20th the price of the original proprietary drug, Imigrant. We've all got freedom of choice, and in many cases, it's about what insurance will cover, though insiders don't like to talk about it. They'll all pretty much agree off the record that generics are exactly the same as proprietary drug. And oftentimes, and especially in the case of Imigran and the generic coming out of Glaxo from the very same manufacturing plant and packaging line. All right. Very interesting. Thanks for that. And now, since we're talking about COVIDiot stuff, comes an email from the famous Oscar Miner. He's one of the early crypto and mining guys that came down to one of my very first Expat Insider seminars, and he remained in Guatemala ever since. A man of many talents and many hobbies, including a room in his house where I think he's got something like 10 drones in various stages of assembly and disassembly. He certainly is a masterful techie, and he always speaks for around an hour at my Expat Insider seminars on the subject of crypto mining and related stuff, and he sent me this, entitled, The Joys of Traveling During a Plandemic, Flight Number 1, Entering Costa Rica. I'll condense this a bit because we're getting towards the end of the show. He says, My family and I are really excited to get back on the road and do some proper traveling again. For the last 21 years, I visited at least 6 new countries a year, traveling countless times to my favorites. That is, every year except last year, because of the COVIDiot stuff. But finally, we'd had enough and decided to pack our bags and take a trip anyway. You see, we want to go to Brazil. We know people there. Only problem is, my wife is Chinese and we need a visa for her to enter Brazil. And the Brazilian embassy has been closed here in Panama, where I am right now, since December. We have gone to the Brazilian embassy many times to check with them about opening, and they can never confirm a proper opening date. Even when we email or phone them, we don't get a straight answer. So we decided to head over to Costa Rica for a couple of weeks. You know, it's right next door to Panama. Plus, we heard the Brazilian embassy in Costa Rica is apparently open, but we just didn't pop over for nothing. We had a friend who's staying locally in San Jose confirm that. The plan being to go to Costa Rica on the weekend, allow 2 days to submit the visa application, which is overly complicated and requires a ton of stuff, and then head to one of the Costa Rican resorts on the Pacific coast while we waited for the paperwork to get processed at the Brazilian embassy. So off we went. Leaving Panama was simple. Tucumán Airport in Panama was like a ghost town and hardly anybody was there in the lines. We learned our lesson, though, last time when traveling out of Panama with our daughter. If you're bringing a kid along, make sure you bring the birth certificate to show immigration that is indeed your child. Even having the same last name on other documents is not enough. We had to show the paperwork. This is important to know throughout Latin America, actually. Anyway, although the airport was empty, our flight to Costa Rica was full. Seems Panamanians are big on going to Costa Rica, too. It was a short 60-minute flight when we touched down in San Jose. Here's the hitch. At immigration in San Jose, you must show you have travel insurance from a company that specializes in Costa Rican insurance and will cover you in case you become ill with the COVIDiot disease while there. You must be covered for at least $50,000 and a minimum coverage of $2,000 for lodging expenses, etc., etc., just in case you test positive. Now, if you don't have insurance, they give 2 options, INS and SagaCor. However, I found them very expensive. Luckily, we had full travel insurance with our own particular provider that covers us for $1 million, but does not cover our hotel stay in Costa Rica in the event we test positive, get sick, or have to spend extra days in quarantine in a hotel. That's something I could easily cover myself, but you need insurance. So that really does smell like a racket if you ask me. So we had to buy it. Then after you have your insurance sorted out, you must take a health declaration online health questionnaire, which will automatically generate a QR code that you will want to see at immigration when you check through. We saw tons of people leaving that line and being refused entry because they didn't know about this step. Typical Latin America. However, the good thing is that Costa Rica has dropped, at least at the time of this writing, the COVIDiot test on arrival. I personally have zero interest in being lobotomized with those barbaric PCR shish kebab skewer up the nose test. So far, so good. We came in on the Sunday, and late afternoon, we walked down to the Brazilian embassy. to judge how long the walk would be and to make sure we knew where we were going the next day, so it wasn't any surprise Monday morning. Then he says, from my experience, most embassies only work from 8:30 in the morning till noon. All right, meet Johnny with my two cents. He's really being optimistic, saying embassies work from 8:30 till noon. You know, in my experience, I've tagged along with many people from different countries to their embassies, and the smaller the embassy, the more likely they are to have a sign on the door saying, we'll be back tomorrow, even though their hours on the door post that they're open. It was like that before the COVIDiot crap. All right, then he says, so Monday morning came and we arrived at the Brazilian embassy to find the front door security guard would not let us in, saying we needed an appointment. I pulled out some papers, waved them around, and somehow he let us in anyway with a confused look on his face. Didn't even have to pay him a bribe. But our luck did not hold out. At the next checkpoint, a second security guard informed us that the embassy's not open. There weren't any officials around to open it up. Then he called someone, and he called another, and he called another, with no luck. As you might imagine, we were a little pissed and surprised that our friend had confirmed they were indeed open. Here we took the time, the effort, and the dough to fly to another country, only to get the bum's rush. So what the hell happened? Anyway, we were given an emergency phone number for the embassy and started a WhatsApp conversation with them. All right, me Johnny here with two more cents. Remember, when in Latin America, you have to have WhatsApp or you won't be able to connect with anyone, even though Big Brother and Mark Zuckerberg are always listening. You know, of course, WhatsApp is owned by Facebook. All right, then he says he finally got through on the emergency phone number and it turns out they had not updated their opening hours on their government website or on the door to reflect their COVIDiot hours. Even though we've only been in this pandemic for more than 12 months now. Apparently, the embassy folks are so busy they haven't had the time or opportunity to change the numbers on the website. It figures, lardasses. And about my emails, they said they didn't receive them because they changed their email address too, which is also not updated on their website. We even went so far as to stand in front of the embassy and send selfies to the bureau rats, hoping they'd come down to see us. No luck there either. Finally, an embassy guy explained there will be no way in the next 2 days to see them in person. However, the good news was, he said, that the entire processing time for the visa would take only about 15 business days. That's 3 weeks. So in the end, we ended up walking back and forth from our Airbnb to the Brazil embassy about 20 times with zero results. And to top it off, when we went to the bank to pay for the visa ahead of time, after standing in line for about an hour, the teller told my wife she couldn't take the money. She had to go back to the Airbnb and get her passport and show it to him. They wouldn't take the dough without her proving who she was. Such are the joys and pleasures of traveling Latin America in the age of COVID.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.